listening obviously survived Christmas, didn't you? We have a new engineer who's joined the show, Ernie Skatten, who I've seen around the building and seems more than capable. Ben Anderson in his usual producer seat. This is Rick Kogan. The show is called After Hours, the final After Hours of 2018. My guest, and I'm happy to have him here, is he was planned during, as you well know, during the football season. This show gets chopped and canceled and shortened and abbreviated and whatever other word you want to use. And I had planned to have Dusty Tsang in here a few months ago when I, for one, thought the Bears were going to be lousy. It turns out not. So get ready for Bears fever. Dusty, it is a pleasure to have you in, finally.
Rick,
finally.
Thank you so much.
It's not like you haven't been on the show, but it's a pleasure to... You do such interesting things with... It's an online magazine publishing house called Stay Thirsty that you can find at staythirstymedia.com. And I ever hate to have you talk about this, but the reason for Stay Thirsty is it is born out of a terrible tragedy.
Yeah, my wife and I lost our only child, Ryan, in 2004. He had bipolar disorder. And we actually started a foundation in his honor to raise awareness and support research in the year 2004. And it's now in its 14th year. 2 years after Ryan passed away, his close friends who lived in Chicago, although none of them came from Chicago, called us up and they said, it was May of 2006, they said, we'd like to come over for dinner and we'd like to talk about Ryan. And I thought, wow, these kids are 25. Would I have done that at 25?
Yeah, and the answer is probably, we're about
no,
the same age.
Yeah,
the answer is probably no.
No. And so they came over and my wife made dinner. And they started to talk about Ryan and things that Ryan liked. And Ryan had a philosophy to stay thirsty for things of the creative mind.
Yeah.
He'd actually seen the word stay thirsty written in cement at Schiller and Wells in Old Town.
Right. In the heart of Old Town.
Across from Orso's. And so growing out of that, we decided we'd start an internet rock and roll magazine. And the kids would come over every Thursday night for the summer. And we'd plan it out. Nobody had ever done anything like this. And we launched it September 1st.
Well, that's
1st.
Early in the internet days, too,
mind. It seemed like it.
Yeah.
And so we launched it September 1st of 2006. No fanfare, nothing else.
Yeah.
We said we'd come and publish this magazine online once a month. And the kids would write reviews on concerts they went to and artists that our son liked. And we kept on doing that. And then about a year and something later, I engineered it so we became part of Google News. So, again, very early on.
Yeah.
And over a period of time, the kids drifted away and the magazine changed. And now it's really an arts and entertainment magazine, sort of a 21st century version of the Paris Review, if people have read that.
And or The New Yorker, I believe.
Well, thank you. That's a nice comment.
I'm dead serious
thank
about
you.
This. I've been following Stay Thirsty not since the early days, but the pretty early days.
Well, what's changed is, I mean, if you look on the site now, we have, as an example, let me get it up here, Robert Olin Butler,
yeah.
Pulitzer Prize winner, who went to Northwestern. He was 2 years behind, I was 2 years behind him in the theater department, and he wrote some original material for us. We have Robin Green. You say, well, who's Robin Green?
I know Robin Green.
Okay.
Tell the listeners.
Yeah. So Robin Green invented a little television show called Northern Exposure, and then she invented another one called The Sopranos, and now she's got Blue Bloods.
Yeah.
She's won 4 Emmys, 3 Golden Globes, and 2 Peabodys. So and we also have Jim Ginsberg from CD Records here in Chicago. And his wife, Patrice Michaels. We have a thing from Patricia Barreto from the Harris Theater. We have a very interesting, we have a woman who is a concert violinist, goes all over the world. She writes a regular column for us. We publish quarterly, and she was in Vietnam, and she interviewed some of the people that she put on symphony orchestras within Vietnam.
Take me back, Dusty Tsang, to the point where... Ryan's friend said, well, thanks, that's been fun. And you, talk to me about what inspired you to expand? Because it could have been, Dusty, it could have been a very nice experiment, and it could have been fun for Ryan's friends, and it also could have been fun for the legacy. The foundation was certainly going to go on. But you seem to have been really energized and captured by this notion of covering. Not just, you know, it's going to come a long way from rock and roll reviews, I'll tell you that much.
Well, thank you, yeah.
And what was it that inspired you and made you, because I know so many ventures in those days of the internet that just evaporated.
Well, I think part of it was when I formed the company, I gave some shares to each of the kids, so they participated. We never had partners, outside partners. We never had a bank loan. So we were able to do what we wanted. And growing out of my background...
as an entertainment attorney.
Well, I started in theater at Northwestern, then went into radio, TV, film, eventually became an entertainment lawyer and an intellectual property lawyer. So it was really natural for me to work in this area. And then I've learned so much and met so many just extraordinary people, from poet laureates to, you know, Grammy winners. And so what... What have I found? I found that the really successful ones that are not divas, we don't deal with the divas, the really successful ones are hardworking, they're smart, they're kind, and they're efficient.
Yeah.
Some of the best marketeers in the world are the old rock and rollers.
Oh, no question.
Oh, my God. These guys are great. And so it's been an honor, really, to work with these people, and they wanted... We're bringing out a book called Stay Thirsty Poets, Volume 1, just after the first of the year.
Yeah, it's about time.
But we have poet laureate Billy Collins in it.
Billy Collins is my...
Oh, my God, he's great.
If I had a chance to have a drink with Shakespeare, I would have taken that chance. But of all living contemporary poets, I would pick Billy Collins to sit at a bar. I love Billy Collins' work.
He did a TED Talk, and he does a poem... about a dog he had.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that the dog never really liked him. And it tells the story of how the dog tries to sabotage everything he's doing.
That's funny. So let me tell you, people, too, out there, if you were looking, if you're one of those people who goes, I hate poetry because you had to learn it in high school or something, sample any Billy Collins. I think he's the most accessible poet writing these days.
You can go on YouTube and see and put in Billy Collins and see him actually doing it. And he's spectacular. We have poet laureate Robert Pinsky. We have Pulitzer Prize winning poet Paul Muldoon. So plus we have some younger poets, but all prize winning. So, you know, I'm not sure how it happened, frankly.
Well,
it's just evolved.
Because I think you were not, Dusty, if I can say so, you were not pragmatic about it. You were not, I want to have the best internet magazine out there, and I want to make X amount of dollars, which is the reason most people started these things. I'm going to keep Mr. Tsang here for at least another half hour talking more about Stay Thirsty, which is also a book publishing arm. He's here with his lovely wife, Joyce, and I'm so glad to have him in here. I will tell you, hey, Bulls fans, enter your chance to win the ultimate VIP Bulls Night experience at chicagotribune.com/BullsQuiz, courtesy of the Chicago Tribune. We'll be back in a couple minutes. Welcome back. That, of course, is the voice of Frank Sinatra. I did a show a couple days ago about having three saloon keepers on the show. Jeff McGill of the Billy Goat, late of the Billy Goat, Bruce Elliott of the Old Town Ale House, and Colin Cordwell of the Red Lion Pub. And I just thought Sinatra was a perfect person to play, being a saloon singer. It's my great pleasure to have Dusty Tsang in here. We are talking about, we will get to the foundation, but one of the wonderful outgrowths, if you can determine that such a thing, of the death of the 24-year-old son of Dusty and Joyce Tsang is Stay Thirsty Media. It is a magazine. It is a book publishing outfit. It is also a foundation. It is a spectacular art show. I guess this was the first one last year. An astonishing thing that we will talk about because Dusty's going to be here for a while. Back to my whole notion of the organic nature of this, and it did though, Dusty. It grabbed your interest as well as your heart in doing this, and you were able to not put the arm on, but make an entree to people who most magazines, frankly, wouldn't approach, I think.
You know, it was one of those things that it organically grew by itself.
Yeah.
And people, we've reached a point now where we have too many people who want to be in the magazine. And we're, you know, it's such an honor to work with these extraordinarily talented people. And to learn from them.
Sure.
And to learn about their lives.
How does it work? Let me take us through, myself and the listeners, of, obviously you don't have a big office like the Tribune offices at the Prudential Building, but do you have a staff?
It's decentralized. The whole point of the internet is you don't need a big building. You don't need an office. We have people all over the world who have different assignments, and they will turn in a column, they'll do an interview. They'll do an interview of somebody in foreign countries. Again, this is the beauty of the internet.
No kidding.
And it is all content-based, and it's the quality of the content. So where we're not bogged down with gravity.
You're not bogged down with ad sales.
None of that.
Yeah.
And if you notice, there's no advertising on the magazine.
I know.
And so the magazine was never, I never believed that internet advertising was going to be a successful thing.
Well, you're the only one. Man, talk to the former publishers of American newspapers. Yeah, that was the salvation. That was the golden fleece.
I never understood how good, it would work. I really didn't.
Good for you.
And so I went the other way, which was let's concentrate on the content. Let's work with great people. And then we figured out another way to monetize,
sure.
Which is to publish books. And so it was in February of 2009, there was a day when Amazon made their Kindle software available for iPhones. So I said, wow, 25 million people suddenly could potentially buy a book. And we started a publishing company and started to attract people. And, you know, you and I were talking a little bit about writers. We've seen, you know, several thousand manuscripts, and it's interesting. It's like if you listen to a song on the radio,
yeah.
You can tell within, you know, 2 seconds whether you're going to like it or not.
No question.
And with these manuscripts, you can tell within the first paragraph whether the person can write.
Yeah.
And by the second one, whether they can hold your attention.
Right.
And by the third one, whether or not they're really going to keep you there.
You know, the interesting thing, too, is when you started the publishing aspect of Stay Thirsty was the time the conventional publishing business was absolutely imploding or exploding, however you want to determine that. And so I think you had out there a number. What used to happen, as you well know, is you could discover a young writer with talent, and publishing houses would then go about the business of nurturing this young talent by sometimes giving them a fairly decent advance, which would allow them to buy cereal, or by publishing their first book, which would empower them. You must have found that to be true. You must have found some writers out there who, except for Stay Thirsty Publishing, might not have ever gotten published.
Actually, I designed the business based upon the old Hollywood movie model, which is you find your young stars or starlets, you put them in movies, you teach them how to do things, you put them in movies, and you keep exposing them to the public until the public catches on.
Yeah.
And so we have taken debut authors and made them into number one Amazon bestsellers.
I know.
So,
name one. I mean, give me an example.
Stephen J. Griffel.
Sure.
He was, early on, we found him back in 2009. He wrote a book called 40 Years Later about a summer camp romance he'd had at the time of Woodstock, which was just down the road. And he reconnected with this woman 40 years later. And his book has sold over 55,000 copies. So another one, Matt Cattugno, wrote a book, The Last 24 Hours of His Father, who was one of the World War II generation.
Oh, wow.
And he's now transitioned into writing Westerns, and one of his Westerns has just taken off.
Do you wind up, I have to assume that you wind up or want, in many cases, to meet many of these authors face-to-face?
Most of them I haven't.
Really?
You know, it's such an interesting business,
wow.
too. So much is done by email.
Yeah,
by
sure.
email. I don't really actually talk to that many people either. And in the old days, you know, you had to go to lunch, you had to do this. Not anymore. Now it's really very much content-driven.
Can you give me, without detailing any secrets, roughly the kind of deal that is made
sure,
with your authors?
It's very simple. If you're a debut author, you get 25% of the gross. If you're an author with provenance, you get 50% of the gross. And we do it based on the gross because if you go back in the old days of publishing or movies, it was all based on the net.
Yep.
And the net was how the company would depreciate things and do other deals. This way, we get a statement from Amazon, and this is the number. We cut it in half or cut it in quarters, and that's it.
Are these print-on-demand?
We originally started only as a digital publisher.
Right, I remember that.
But then we transitioned into being a print-on-demand paperback. We distribute only through Amazon, but Amazon gives us enormous... We have bookstores all over the world, and they give us enormous marketing leverage.
Many authors I know who work for various... Amazon now has, you know, maybe 10 different imprints, could not... Mercer and something is one of theirs, could not be happier... Than working with
that's
Amazon.
That's right. No, it's great.
And you too.
Absolutely. Right from the beginning, I was exclusive with them. But so our whole arrangement was to go ahead and nurture writers, bring them up over time, and as they became more successful, their percentage got better.
Mm.
And that was it. And we tried to make the business part easy.
Sure. Have any authors abandoned you?
We've abandoned several.
That I can imagine.
Okay, no, there were some divas, and we just gave them back their book and unpublished it and said goodbye.
Yeah.
So
well, they were making demands on you.
I've done this.
Where's my spot on CBS this
done
morning?
This too long. I only want to work with nice people, but ultimately, I want to work with people that know how to deal with that contract, that compact that the writer has with the reader.
Yeah.
I mean, this is something you do silently.
Sure.
Just the reader and the writer. And if they can do it right, it's magic.
Now, you must spend an inordinate amount of time with this, or you keep saying we, and I'm assuming part of that we is your wonderful
wife. Well, she does
Joyce.
The foundation, so... I mean,
okay, you're not getting involved in this business. God love you for that. Joyce is sitting here listening to the two of us yammer.
We made a deal. We said we're going to modulate our schedule. We only work 7 days a week now, so
yeah.
It's...
But it's got to be very time-consuming for you.
It is.
Yeah, but pleasantly so.
It is. But again, I get to work with these extraordinary people, and, you know, there's a lot to learn.
I will tell you that... No, I won't tell you that now. How many books have you published?
We've published 33. We've got a bunch in the hopper. And of the 33, four have become Amazon number one bestsellers.
Wow.
Which is, I think, a pretty good...
Do you offer... Does Stay Thirsty... I've never asked you this. A lot of things I haven't asked you before. Do you take the books as is, or do you, as the head of Stay Thirsty Publishing, say, I think chapter four doesn't really work? Or the creative collaboration that necessarily goes on between publishers and writers is an interesting one to me. Some publishers are incredibly overbearing, but...
We really look at things. We require people to turn it in pretty good order.
Sure.
But if the story, it's really the storyline. If there's an issue with that, we throw it back and say, we're not going to buy it unless you make some changes, your choice. And if you do that and it's up to speed and we think that it'll hold itself together, then we'll go forward.
And this is your aesthetic judgment.
I think it is, yeah.
That's fabulous. One of the Latin school can be proud. Latin, Dusty and I, we've known each other for more than 50 years. We'll continue on and talk a bit more. I think you've gotten if you're not intrigued enough to go to staythirstymedia.com, then I am not doing my job as a radio host. And from there, you will learn more. I want to talk more about the foundation, too, and this amazing Insights art show that was last year and is going to be again this year in October. Joyce is whispering.
A few years ago, a great event took place on Broadway when Miss Ethel Merman stepped before the footlights.
It's always good to hear Frank Sinatra, but
I'd
rather hear him sing. But that was Frank Sinatra talking. We don't care. Dusty Tsang has, I think, given you a great, great overview of Stay Thirsty Media, which involves a magazine, quarterly magazine, and now some 30-some books through its publishing arm. Some of the authors you have published and continue to publish have bipolar disorder, do they not?
I want to say
you don't look for them.
Right, exactly. we certainly can identify when we think somebody has it, because the way they perceive things, it's like with the art in the insights, if I may. So what we did, this was actually my wife's idea. We did a national competition for artists who had bipolar disorder to submit two-dimensional and three-dimensional works of art, and we had a national panel of jurors who decided. There were 325 submissions who picked
the
top 20.
Did that number surprise you?
It did, really. Yeah. It really did. And then there was a family that contributed to the foundation so that each of the selected artists received a $500 grant.
Ugh.
But each of the artists also then had to contribute the winning piece to the foundation's permanent collection.
You have a permanent collection.
The
that's
foundation
fantastic.
Has, right, which will go on the road to help spread awareness about bipolar disorder.
What is the level of awareness of bipolar? I mean, everybody, I think, if you walked down on the street and said, "Hey, what do you know about bipolar disease?" People would say, "Yeah, it's I've heard of it, but."
The kids will know more than the parents.
Why is that?
Don't know. They just seem to be more.
The diagnosis, I mean, it's always interesting to me about the level of diagnosis. I mean, autism fascinates me because, you know, when we were kids, I certainly never had heard that word. But looking back, I obviously knew people who suffered somewhere on the spectrum. The diagnosis of bipolar, is it a difficult one to make?
Well, that's one of the purposes of the foundation, is to fund research. And with bipolar disorder, there is no empirical biomarker test. If you have cancer or diabetes, you can take a blood test and so on. So with bipolar disorder, especially in adolescence, it can take 10 years to get a proper diagnosis.
Ugh.
So during that period of time, you know, is it a truant teenager? Is it a teenager acting out? Is it something else? And so without a good diagnosis, it's difficult to move forward. So we want to go ahead and find a test that will then make it clear.
That's great.
And we're supporting research around the country.
Are you increasingly hopeful that that might be able to happen?
Of course you do,
but are you increasingly optimistic talking with various people in the medical field?
The answer is I think so. I mean, for instance, one of the projects we have going at Mass General at Harvard, they take a 2-millimeter biopsy of skin, like you go to the dermatologist and he takes off a skin tag.
Yeah.
And then in a dish, they program your adult human skin cells to grow into neurons, just like in your brain.
Wow.
And they can eventually test those neurons to see which ones have bipolar disorder and which ones don't, and then potentially expose them to different molecules, drugs. Like if you had a bacterial infection, they take a culture and they say this antibiotic works. So we're pushing ahead with that.
Now, you were having in October your second Insights exhibition here. Will it be at the same place, right? The Zola Lieberman Gallery, which is a great gallery space. And, you can get information about this. And some of these works are unbelievable. I wasn't expecting, like, lousy paintings, but Ryan's stuff is in multimedia just stunning. And he is next to Jonathan Winters. How did you get Jonathan Winters' stuff in this?
A friend of my wife's was a close friend of Jonathan Winters, and she inherited from him much of his art. And he had bipolar disorder.
Had he been diagnosed?
Yes.
He had.
Yes, he knew what he had. But for those people who are listening who have bipolar disorder who are artists, they can go to the foundation website, which is questforthetest.org, or they can put in Tsang bipolar on Google. And on the homepage, there's a link where they can click and go to. Right now, the third competition is open. There's no cost to enter. and they can upload 5 JPEGs and be part of this next round.
Wow, it's a stunning show, and you will be on. You will both be on. Joyce will get more airtime than you next
time.
Well,
I think that's a great idea. Good luck. You've got to convince
her. In October. You also gave me a book here. This is one of your books. I don't know if it's the latest, but it's 30 Words That Will Change Your Life. And it will change your life in probably 15 minutes because it's certainly an easy read. It's by S.I. Wells. And it's fascinating, Dusty. I find it fascinating. It gives you a word like bravery. And then it gives you, I don't know if these are definitions, but they're inspirations. So I'm going to pick bravery, which is chapter 13. Facing adversity cannot be avoided. Courage is the antidote to fear. Understand the moment you are in and understand the value of your convictions. This thing must be something of a sensation.
I think it is. Yeah. I mean, people, it's fascinating to see how people are using it in their daily lives. Or some people, there have been some therapists who have put it on their coffee table
and used it in their sessions.
So people have taken it as a spiritual. They've taken it as a guidance. From the people we've talked to, and then there's some people that don't get it at all.
Yeah,
I mean,
of course.
They just absolutely don't have a clue.
Now, who is S.I. Wells?
He's one of our senior writers.
Yeah. What do you have to do to be a senior writer? He's been around
for
a long time. When I was named a senior writer at the Tribune, they said, oh, that must mean you're old. I go, no. It means I've been around for a long time.
Right.
You hold occasionally benefits for the foundation, do you?
Yes, not? Yes.
One is coming up?
The one that there are two in Chicago, one in May and one in June. The one in May is a medical briefing luncheon.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you can find out information on
sure.
the foundation website. The one in June is the screening at the Museum of Contemporary Art of a documentary about a young fellow named Andy Irons, who was a 3-time world champion surfer.
Wow.
Who passed away when he was 32. He had bipolar disorder. And it's just an extraordinary documentary. And we have actually one of the people that's in the film coming to be on a panel discussion afterwards.
Who obviously knew him, too.
Well, he was actually a doctor that they brought in.
But
we have a surfer who was in the movie, too, who may be coming up.
Wow, and you're going to screen that as a benefit
at the Museum of Contemporary Art. Exactly.
You've obviously seen the movie. Is it good?
The movie's fabulous. I mean, really, this was an extraordinary young man, and it was a tragedy.
How did he die?
Actually, of a heart attack, but he had opiate addiction. He had bipolar disorder. His brother is in the film. His brother was saying that one of the world championships he won strung out on drugs.
Wow.
That's how good he was. But he got married to a young woman who was just charming and wonderful, but I don't think she understood what she was getting into.
It is a fascinating world in which you live, and I am the tragedy of your son, Ryan's death. Any death at 24 is tragic, but the fact that he lives on in these inspiring ways is something that gives me gives me great hope. It really does give me great hope. It makes you and you especially work 7 days a week, but it certainly is a kind of work that I think you couldn't do this if it was just if you got in your head one day, hey, I think I'll start a magazine of rock and roll reviews.
We wouldn't.
Right. I mean, of course we
laugh that Ryan is keeping mom and dad pretty busy. So
yeah, and you must.
We wouldn't be doing any of this.
You know, the other thing about it, not to get sentimental, but it's also a way to keep him firmly in both of your lives. There cannot be a day where you don't think about it. Dusty, we've known each other for a very long time, and there are very few people in this world that I admire as much as you for what you're doing. I mean that. Go to StayThirstyMagazine.com, and you will be able to get all... Can they connect with the foundation through that site?
Actually, it's interesting. On the navigation bar of Stay Thirsty... you'll see the mission statement,
the
manifesto.
It's in there, right.
And if you go down to the bottom, you click on a page about Ryan, and then at the bottom of that, you can find the foundation.
Well, it says here, learn more about the creative legacy of Ryan Lutzang.
Exactly.
Thank you both. It's a great way to end this year.
Thank you so much.
Hopeful.
My pleasure. What a pleasure. Thank you.
We're shaking hands, for those of you who can't see us on the radio. And, Joyce, good to see you, too. Happy New Year.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take a long commercial break, and then we'll talk about two guys who are trying to make a film about the more than 1,000 streets in this country that are named in honor of Martin Luther King, some of them in really nasty neighborhoods. And why is that? We'll be back.
A few years ago, Fred Astaire and Eleanor Powell made a picture called Born to Dance. It was naturally a musical with songs
like... I love Frank Sinatra, but I like him singing rather than talking. And maybe Earl and I have discovered like the only Frank Sinatra talk is spoken word album. You'll hear some music. We'll preview the next one we do. Some time ago, I got a very intriguing email from a young man named, I think he's a young man, named Earl Hardy about a film that he is in the process of making. Earl, welcome to the show. Can you hear me?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Where are you, in Los Angeles?
No, actually, I'm in Michigan, home for the holidays for a couple of days.
Oh, good for you. We were trying, as I said, that you sent me one of the most intriguing emails I've gotten in a long time about a project you're working on. It is initially wanted to be a short film about the many, and I do mean many, Martin Luther King streets named in this country in honor of Dr. King. Well, how did this idea come to you, Earl?
Well, first of all, Rick, thank you so much for having
me. No, my real... Really, you know, I got back to you. I don't get back to everybody in 2 minutes on an email, and I'm like, wow, this is a great... What a great idea.
It was definitely a light speed how you got back to with the...
It was.
Star Wars reference.
How did this idea come to you?
Well, essentially, Rick, it was a situation where I am originally from Detroit, Michigan, and I was, of course, a young man in grade school learning about various amazing leaders from our history,
sure,
from our past, and of course, we talked about Dr. King. And as I was maturing and becoming an adult, I would go to the MLK Street in Detroit and saw that it was kind of not the best place to be, so to speak. And
yeah,
I thought, wow, that's a bit interesting, a bit weird. And then as I began to travel to other cities, other places, I began to see that this wasn't isolated to just Metro Detroit. This was happening in places like Chicago or Los Angeles or down south on the East Coast. And there was this weird phenomenon where the MLK streets were actually located in really blighted, kind of underdeveloped places. So,
yeah, in downtrodden parts of Chicago. I have written about the Martin Luther King Jr. Drive in Chicago is the first. It's a dubious claim, I would think, Earl. A dubious claim, but it's the first. And there are now something in the neighborhood of 1,100 streets named in honor of Dr. King, aren't there?
Right. That's probably the ones overseas as well. Mm-hmm.
And the ones that are overseas, you know, recently, actually, there was an effort to rename a street in Kansas City. I don't remember if Kansas City, Missouri, or Kansas, that these streets always, and I'm sure you found this in your research for this upcoming film, you found they always, do they not, cause controversy. Almost always.
Oh, Rick, I wish I could say you were lying, but you are correct, my friend. There is always a underlying tension, a bubbling frustration, some confusion about where to place the street, why to place the street there, who should be, you know, in charge of naming the street, things like that. There's always these things, and it always centers around kind of three different issues. One being money. A lot of times people are saying that it's too expensive to change letterhead, change marketing material, things like that. There's also a sense of MLK maybe not being that a person's hero. For instance, maybe if someone is maybe of a different nationality, they don't necessarily feel that MLK really did anything of note for their culture, for, you know, their population. And then the last thing is that it was a situation where they need support for the people on the street to have the street name. Yeah. And it's just, they just feel that they shouldn't have to honor that person because they want to honor maybe another person or maybe another street or something like that. So there's always frustration.
Yeah, you're really onto a fascinating thing. You're African-American, yes?
Yes, correct.
How old are you, Earl?
I am 36.
That's so good. And you're a filmmaker?
Yes.
Good. The thing that you can go, well, after the news at 10 o'clock, I'm going to tell people how exactly to get to your fundraising arm. And you're raising funds, modest funds, to just sort of fund the initial, you want to make a short film, right, that addresses the things we're talking about. Chicago certainly has to play a part in that because there was some controversy. You people who live here know where Martin Luther King Jr. Drive is, do you not? There was some argument in the city council to allow it to be a street that ran all the way across the city of Chicago. And in a brutal city council meeting, Daley knew this city, and his fear was, and I think, and Earl, tell me if you think of the justified fear, that if he had changed the name of Western Avenue to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Drive, that on certain neighborhoods, especially on the north side and maybe on the south side, that people would have defaced or destroyed the signs. That's heartbreaking, but it's true, isn't it, Earl?
Yeah, that's really sad, Rick. That happens pretty often with these situations. And what happened in Chicago is really a small blip in terms of what typically happens in the situation, where a lot of times a group gets together and they want to name the street on a prominent thoroughfare through the city, and they get pushback, as they did in Chicago, as they're doing right now in Kansas City, in terms of how long do we make the street, where do we place the street, because certain residents on that particular street that will be named after MLK may not be the most accepting of that naming, you know, for whatever reason. So there's always that in the backdrop, for sure.
Yeah. It must, in some ways, and I hesitate to think that Dr. King could come back and listen to this kind of controversy, probably break his heart. But you have found in your research that most of the Martin Luther King Jr. honorary streets, it's a continual kind of ghettoization of King, don't you think?
Yeah. That's definitely the unfortunate narrative that is kind of plagiarizing and really just plaguing the cities and the areas around those streets. A lot of times they are receiving not the proper funding. They are not receiving the support that other streets may receive from the city.
Yeah, I find it really, really disturbing. I certainly understand it, and you're coming against, and you're going to have to detail in this film the incredible bureaucracy involved in just
the simple aspect.
What you think would be a simple aspect of changing a street into, you know, King had his flaws, but, you know, so did Abraham Lincoln, and there are a million Lincoln Avenues in this. There's not a person who's had a street named after him.
It's really amazing to see how, like you said, a simple street name causes so much friction, so much strife. This is really odd.
Now, we were going to have him on, but he's tied up with family. You have a producer named Michael Wilder, who is from Chicago. How do you know Michael?
So Michael and I went to Michigan State University,
mm-hmm.
and Michael is a really prominent lawyer in Chicago. He's been there for the last, say, maybe 15, 20 years, so he's been really part of the community there, been able to really understand and give me just the feedback in terms of understanding the weird political nature
of Chicago.
Exactly.
Yeah. When you first told him this idea, what did he think?
He thought it was a great idea. He thought Chicago was a ripe place for it.
Yeah.
Because of some of the historic things that you mentioned in your article and in our conversation this evening. So it really is a hotbed because, again, Chicago has a really strong and vibrant and aggressive black kind of voice there.
Sure.
Than, you know, it may be in other areas. And with the way the street was named and the situation now, I think it's a really great piece to kind of highlight in the film and in our coming just
well, and it also,
pieces and things like that.
I think in many ways, Earl Hardy, you're lucky in that a place as interesting as Chicago was
became
the first place in. I was actually surprised at that, but I knew that one of the reasons was Daly was trying to placate, so to speak, Richard
right.
J. Daly, the black community in advance of the Democratic convention. There's so many story threads through that. You're in the process now, Earl, of raising money, and after the news, if you can stick on the phone for a few more minutes,
sure.
we'll tell people how to do it. You're not trying to raise that much money to make this short film, and you want to make the short film, if I'm not wrong, is kind of a calling card to raise the funds to make a feature-length film. Is that true?
Correct, Rick. Correct, right. Rick. As you and your listeners probably know, to make a feature film is incredibly expensive. And
yeah, there are no superheroes in this, but
right?
It's incredibly expensive. But by short, how long do you hope this first film to be?
Not that long. We're probably talking around 12 to 14,
perfect.
15 minutes.
Perfect, because I think that would be a really good kind of, and it is, let's face it, this is Hollywood, man. It is, that would be an effective sales tool at 12 or 15 minutes.
Right.
You don't have to beat
right.
people to death and get them in a place. But I also think, Earl Hardy, just listening to you talk, this is going to be an amazing feature-length film. So stick around through the news, and then I'll have you on for a few more minutes to tell people how to get to this stuff, and we'll keep saying nice things about Michael Wilder, too.
Oh, give me land, lots of land on the starry skies above. Don't fence me in.
Literally, right now we've been listening to Frank Sinatra talk, and that's Frank Sinatra singing one of his worst songs ever, to my mind. It is my real pleasure to have on the phone from the holiday vacation, probably, in his home state of Michigan, filmmaker Earl Hardy, who is in the process of making a short film in order to make a longer film about what he calls, and I think this is so right, Earl, the perplexing phenomena of so many Martin Luther King streets in the United States. The phenomenon being
right.
that some of them are in incredibly blighted neighborhoods. The reason behind this, is not going to be, and I think this is a really smart choice of yours, this is not going to be a deadly, serious documentary, because I think in some ways there are some it's a social commentary, and in doing so, it almost becomes a social comedy, doesn't it?
Correct. We definitely set out not to make this a heavy-handed, over-the-top,
yep.
Just a really hyper-dramatic in terms of the tone and message of the film, because we feel as filmmakers that a lot of times when you come across that way, you can kind of lose people, you can turn people off in terms of your messaging. So
oh,
we wanted
yeah.
to make this a bit more lighter, a bit more digestible for our consumers, for our viewers, to understand that, yes, this is a important issue. This is something that needs to be addressed, but this is going to be come from a more softer perspective in terms of in these stories that we've researched, that we've heard, that we've listened to, there is some kind of comedic element.
No question.
That, you really just can't believe that happened. Like, wow, this really happened? Like, just for instance, a company down south built a entire new road in their city to be named after, just so they wouldn't have to have the MLK moniker on their
come on,
it's just,
really?
It's
now, is there? I'll bet you're going to come up with, I know you're deep into research, but you haven't finished, you're going to come up with some really, and even the weird story, I think, about Daly naming Chicago be the first Martin Luther King Drive, so that he, because he was fearful of African Americans disrupting the 68 convention. Boy, was he wrong about that.
Right.
Yeah, he didn't name a street after like Timothy Leary or somebody. Have you found, Earl, before we get to the fundraising aspect of this, who's going to be, are you going to have actors in this movie? Or are you mostly going to interview bureaucrats, or is it going to be kind of a combination? And residents, I assume you're going to interview some.
Right. So it's going to be a narrative short film. So research, the information, the data, the facts, that will come from kind of that will be pre-production, where we are sitting down with people like yourselves and people, and we've reached out to maybe 10 to 12, 15 other cities and had conversations, had meetings, had phone talks, phone chats about what's going on, what's happening, because of course we can't be in every city,
of course, no.
Every MLK street, yeah. in America.
Sure.
But we've begun to really just create a national database of individuals that we're working with on a weekly, daily basis to understand what's happening, what's the perception, what is the kind of scuttlebutt that we can use for this film.
And I also think you have the ability, I think, to use and employ some, you know, young actors and male and female and musicians as part of this thing. You are starting on January 7th, which is only for a few days and only for 30 days. You're starting a fundraising effort. How can people find that? Where do they go? You have a Facebook page, that I know.
Yes. So we are on Facebook and we are also on Instagram. Both pages are KingBoulevardShortFilm.com, and that will be KingBLVD. Short film, short film, FILM. Those will be on Facebook and Instagram. But the main initiative that we are going to launch on January 7th for 30 days, as you mentioned, will be on a platform called Seed and Spark. So that is a similar platform to Kickstarter.
Sure.
But this platform is primarily just for filmmakers.
Oh, interesting.
So, yes.
How do they find it? And SeedandSpark.com, or what is it?
Right, so it's seedandspark.com King Boulevard Short Film. So just the typical website for seedandspark.com. Then you type in the KingBLVDShortFilm, and that will be live on January 7th.
People are smart. Anybody who uses a computer, I'm a computer idiot, and I can find it.
No, I'm sure.
Let me ask you, Earl, and I'm so intrigued by this. I'll be giving you a call in the next couple of weeks to do a story for the Tribune, too. I'm very intrigued by this, because I've written about King Drive so often. Is there a city in this country where you, as a black man, can feel proud of where Martin Luther King Jr. Drive runs? And is there one?
Good question, Rick.
Is there one?
There are a few streets that are doing well.
Yeah.
You know, of course, every street could see improvements and
sure.
see some upgrades, but there are a couple of places. Austin, Texas, which is a really thriving kind of millennial
progressive town,
epicenter right now. They have a really awesome MLK Street there. Actually, quite surprisingly, in New Mexico, there is a really great MLK Street there as well. There's one also in the Charlotte area, and there's also another great one in Tennessee, in Nashville, Tennessee. So there, I would say maybe 7 or 8 streets that are kind of the big, bright, shining spectacles for MLK, but as we talked about this evening, a lot of them aren't doing so well. And why that is.
You know, but I also think, not to give you film advice, but I also think the contrast to where it's been done correctly and admirably and where it's been done as a kind of, you know, kick in the pants is really going to be powerful. So the plan is you're only looking to raise initially $5,000, right?
Right, yes. And that's, not a ton of money. And thank God for it being 2019. You know, a lot of technology, a lot of advancements have allowed the filmmaking process to be a bit cheaper, you know, than it was 15, 20 years ago. So with $5,000, we should be able to really shoot a nice quality 12-minute film that we can take around, shop around to different studios and producers to get more funding.
Yeah, I think I'm a lousy betting guy, but I think you're gonna make that. I don't think there's any doubt.
Sure.
When would you expect? Let's say you get the $5,000. The thing only run, the fundraising thing only runs for 30 days. When would you expect, optimistically, Earl Hardy, to have that 12 to 15 minute thing completed?
Great question, Rick. The timeline that we are working with now would be to run the campaign in January, begin to shoot the film late February, early March,
nice,
and be ready for a premiere and shopping the project around May 1st.
Wow, that's good. Good for you.
Yeah.
And then you raise all that, those hundreds of thousands, if not millions,
yeah,
of dollars.
I know, but it
sounds like, you know, look,
things,
I'm pitched on projects all the time, and this one sounds unbelievably worthwhile, and you sound like a smart young man, and I think you can make a... You've got the right attitude. It's not some deadly serious academic documentary.
Right.
There are all different sides to this. Some of them, you know, surreal, and some of them funny, and some of them deadly serious, too. Earl Hardy, enjoy the rest of your vacation. Get back to L.A., raise this money, and you and I will talk.
Rick, thank you so much for
my pleasure.
You have a wonderful evening.
I love the idea. You, too. You, too.
Okay.
Take care. We will take a... commercial break, and we will then have in here my old friend John Devins, who has, we hinted at his plans a couple months ago on the show, and now he's going to elaborate on what he's doing to bring music and culture and concerts to the great South Side of Chicago. Hearing Frank Sinatra play a bad violin or whatever he's playing. It's my great pleasure. A couple months ago on the show, you heard the voice of John Devins, who is a longtime friend of mine, but also a person I tremendously admire for his, not only for his growing up in Canaryville and picking up a guitar at 12, but how music has informed your life ever since. You did, John Devins. Welcome to the show. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Thank you for coming in. Some guy wrote on Facebook or something, I don't believe John's going to get up. And you responded to him. He said, you're going to be up, too, and listen to me.
Grock better be listening.
That was the best thing. Music, you did at one point, John, and if memory serves, and it always, doesn't always, you did toy with other career. I think you got a degree in marketing or something, and you toyed with other careers, but you were...
DePaul University, marketing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And toyed and worked in a lot of other careers before you had this urge to start your own business.
Always had music, though.
And at one point, you thought of a bakery. Was it a bakery?
Boy, that was an old pipe dream.
Well, good. Most old dreams are pipe dreams. But then you devoted yourself to music, and you started the World Folk Music Company
in
Beverly, which was one of my favorite all-time places. Tell people, remind people about that place.
Well, it got to the point where I didn't know where to buy guitar strings on the South Side.
Mm-hmm.
Is always my line.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? There was a lot of truth to that.
No question.
We had...
had taught at the Old Town School.
I taught at the Old Town School back in the days of Ray Tate. And,
sure.
You know, I really wanted to bring more music down there to the South Side. There was nothing.
Yeah.
And I just got this ridiculous idea, to the much chagrin of my wife, Julia... to open a music store with lessons and eventually concerts. And our first concert was with Art Theme and a little hole in the wall on 99th and Walden Parkway in Beverly, and then we just kept moving up. We got a nice, a nice two flat that we put a studio in.
That's on 103rd,
a concert
right?
hall on 103rd and Wood, and hundreds of students passed by our place, and this concert series took off with your help.
Oh, I remember Mike Flannery. Well, there was what I sensed down there. I love Beverly and have a lot of friends down there, and Morgan Park.
Judy Anderson
also
says hello, by the way.
Yeah. Does she? Great artist. And love it down there, but did always think that it was kind of culturally, musically deprived. Did you sense that when kids came in for lessons? And because going from Beverly to the Old Town School is a long trip for folks.
Tis.
And also going even from Beverly downtown, that you made music so accessible down there. Were people grateful and thankful?
The reason I'm starting this new concert series is because that's all I heard.
Yeah.
Going into the coffee shops in the neighborhood, and boy, John, I really love those concerts. Where you got to do that again. And I've always had my eye on the castle.
Well, the castle, which I wrote about not long ago, that amazing. If you're not from, people who are not from Beverly and don't wind up driving down 103rd Street and stopping at the stop light at Longwood Drive and see that, it's the only castle in Chicago. And it is absolutely worth seeing. You had your eye on that because that, not that they should have taken it upon themselves. It's a church now, most of it.
What they're doing is the Beverly Unitarian Church, they're caretakers for this castle, basically.
Right. The Givens Castle.
The Givens Beverly Castle. And they want to make it a community center. And, I got married there, Julie and I.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Neat.
It is neat. And I've been to several events there. And I said, this has got to be a beautiful, intimate concert series.
And they had never, it's not religious people's jobs to think of that. It also...
Well, Unitarians aren't that religious.
Really?
Am I getting in trouble here?
I don't know. No, how can you get in trouble the day before New Year's Eve saying anything?
Yeah.
He said that in 2018. When you approach them, and we have to say that the concert series that John is putting on is taking place at the castle and at the Heritage Gallery, which is a half a block away from the... And that is such a cozy street. Is that...
Vicky Simmerling's place.
Yeah, is that great restaurants? There was a restaurant there. I think it was called Cafe 103. That was
it's not.
Gone?
Yeah. They have...
Something.
They have a problem with selling alcohol in Beverly in some spots, and I think...
Well, with all due respect to Beverly, most of the people I know in Beverly have no problem drinking alcohol.
No problem.
That's for sure.
So why aren't there more restaurants with it?
Well, you have a lot of nice places that serve alcohol on Western Avenue in that neighborhood. You decided...
Well, that's the other thing. Mm. I'll toot my own horn here.
Please.
Before we had World Folk Music Company... There was nothing going on musically. Now on Western Avenue, there's music everywhere. And a lot of it was driven by my former teachers.
And probably your former students, too.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. One of our former students, Connor Grant, was playing with John Lennon's son.
No, because you seeded, I think, not only
Sean Lennon,
an affection for music, but music is, as I think you know better, certainly better than I, music is an essential element of people's lives, isn't it?
It's certainly essential to mine,
yeah.
and most people I know, if they're not playing, they're listening.
They're listening. You know, it's so funny. This town has such an amazing, amazing reputation musically, with the South Side, again, being relatively untouched by that until now. When you decided you're having some of these concerts at Jack Center with Vicky the Lovely and passionate Vicky Simmerling at her father's gallery, the father the gallery that she and her father ran for such a long time. It's funny because Jack Samerling, a wonderful guy, his artwork is in every house in Beverly, isn't it?
Every house, every bank, every doctor's
bank,
office.
Every postcard, every Christmas
card. I see Jack Samerling's artwork in Colorado.
Do you really?
Oh, I've seen it everywhere.
He was an amazing guy, and Vicky runs a great... She sells a lot of Jack's stuff, but also frames things, and it is a gallery space. Why both places? Why did you decide to have the series at both places? They're not simultaneous, ladies and gentlemen, but it's kind of... They vary. One is at the, and we'll tell you the whole schedule.
In effect, it's two concert series. Exactly. It's a Heritage concert series and a Castle concert series. The Castle concert series, I like to, all of the profit we make goes to the building.
See, that's an amazing thing, too. The building is old. I can't remember exactly how old. I could look it up in this.
Well, it's
story.
A castle. It goes back to medieval times.
Well, but, you know, with these commodities brokers, you could see someone now, some goof with $80 million deciding to build another castle. It was built in 1887 as the home for the family of Robert Givens, who had arrived here as a teenager in 1863 with 10 cents in his pocket. He got into the real estate game and did very, very well. So the money that's raised on this is going to go to help restore, renovate. I mean, it's not falling down, the castle.
But no, it's in good shape.
When you're that old, you need work.
Yeah, the turrets.
Yeah, yeah. This is it is a wonderful thing. Do you... Some of the things coming up here include Ann Harris at the Castle on January 19th, Ed Holstein at Heritage on February 2nd, Catherine Keene at the Castle on February 16th, Larry Gray at the Castle on March 2nd. The one and only, all of these people are talented, but the one and only Michael Smith, March 30th at the Heritage Gallery. Come Sunday at... April 27th and into June with Ann Hills at the Heritage Gallery. When you took, these are performer specific. When you said, Ed, I don't want you to play the Heritage, I want you to play the Castle. How did that work when you decided to book these people?
Single acts work really well at the Heritage Gallery.
Yeah.
Or maybe a duo.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's, and you know, that seats about 50, and then the castle seats about 80.
Mm.
And they claim even more.
Yeah. You've done a couple already. We'll talk about that.
Sure.
John is going to be here all the way to 11 o'clock, even though some people don't believe that he or I stay up this late.
Yeah.
Here we are.
Where are we going afterwards?
Yeah, where are we going? Yeah. Where's some music around here? Where's some music around here? Please stay tuned. Ann Harris, one of the performers who will be performing at the Givens Castle as part of John's very wonderfully ambitious concert series. It started to got its feet wet last year and really hits with Ann Harris on January 19th, Eddie Holstein, Kathleen Keene in February. He is soon going to have a website, but I will certainly keep you posted on this. The World Folk Music Company, which was a Southside version, I think, of the Old Town School of Folk Music. I really do. It may have been smaller.
That was modeled after it.
I know it was, because you taught there for a long time. Why did that event, how long did that last?
13 years.
That's a pretty good run, though, John.
It is a very good run.
Why did it end?
I would say the Republican recession.
Yeah, yeah.
They destroyed people's, retirement.
Disposable money.
Disposable money.
Yeah.
And Beverly there's fairly wealthy people.
Sure.
In Beverly and, you know, upper middle class, and they got hit hard.
Yeah. Yeah. That's suffering, that whole, Everybody got hurt in that thing. You then, I remember, I don't remember what year it was. I'm going to try to find this in the many notes that I have here. You then, and we kept in touch because I just love that place. You know what the headline of a story about you that I wrote in 2005 was? The Music Man.
There you go.
Don't you love that? Now I could call you the Yoga Fanatic.
There you go.
In 2012, you had a joint. I came down there. You and the one and only Jamie O'Reilly were setting up chairs and fixing a room in a, what I thought was a great, great neighborhood, the South Loop. It was a place that was going to, that was called The Venue. You were very high on it and with some great ambitions. What happened there, John, if I can ask you?
There was really no money in it, and
it was like part of a school or something?
Part of a school, kind of a religious school.
Right, Daystar, I think it was called, something like that.
Daystar. And I didn't really have enough of a run of the place.
Right, right.
To be able to do the things I wanted to do.
Yeah.
Put a marquee out on State Street would be one thing, but why in the world... They won't let me do that.
Well, you know, their bureaucracies will have ruined a lot of great ideas. How long did that place last?
A year and a half, 2 years.
Was it frustrating to have to leave?
I knew I'd do it again somewhere.
Yeah. Well, now you're doing it in two places, aren't you?
Now I'm doing it in two places.
When you went to, given the folks at the lovely Unitarians at Givens Castle and proposed this, how did they react to that proposal?
Oh, they were all for it. I work part-time. I'm an avid golfer as well as a yoga guy.
Well, we're going to talk. I'm not letting him go without telling me how he got hooked on yoga, because he was listening or was on the show the last time a yoga instructor was on, and John surprised me by saying, Rick, yoga is the greatest thing in the world. And I thought, really? You're telling me that? We'll get into that for a while. You're a golfer. Go ahead.
Well, and they were looking for a Klee's Golf Shop on Western,
oh,
which is over 100 years old. Charlie
place.
Klee's.
Charlie is one of the great people I know.
Yes,
he really is.
He's a wonderful guy to work for. He helped my game. Eileen Klee's, his wife, is sort of the chairman at the castle.
What a small, wonderful world.
Right.
Yeah.
And so we got to talking, and... the bigger acts are going into the castle. Then by big, I mean three-piece, four-piece. We had Sons of the Never Wrong.
Oh, love them.
Oh, they
love.
Were, what a great show.
Yeah.
What a great show.
Yeah.
And so we have a beautiful, intimate concert in an art gallery that's wonderful. We have Michael Smith, Ann Hills. I've played there. We did a show earlier in the year, which was lovely. And... the castle is for a little larger,
and to help fundraise, and to help
and
fundraise,
to help fundraise,
and to help fundraise for the castle. All of these people who are performing, I'm going to ask you before we get into your yoga, ask you to give me. You've heard a little of the voice of Ann Harris, but I have known many of these people for many years, and just in a quick, not even a summation. Why should someone? What's Ann Harris going to do at the castle on January 19th?
She's going to play the fiddle. She's got a wonderful guitar player coming with her, and I'm embarrassed that I can't remember his name.
It's okay.
They're wonderful together. They're absolutely wonderful. And Ann Harris, as you heard between the break,
we'll play.
She's such a great songwriter and an entertainer. She plays that violin and dances, and it's just incredible to see.
She's like, I mean, she is much like, I've always thought, my great friend Liz Carroll, and I'm sure your friend, too, is just born to entertain. Not only, the great thing about this lineup you have is these are great musicians, but they're also, every one of them, a great entertainer. They get it.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? At the Heritage Gallery on February 2nd is the one and only Ed Holstein, who is truly the one and only.
Funniest man in folk music.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt, he is the brother of Alan Holstein, still alive, and Fred Holstein, a legendary player, sadly no longer around. But Ed is, he will interrupt his very clever songs, too. And he can do the cover of anybody, including his great friend Steve Goodman, with hysterical stories. If you go, ladies and gentlemen, ask him about the night that Vincent Price, the famous horror actor, came to the Earl of Old Town while he was playing. It is one of the great stories you will ever hear. Now, Kathleen Keene, you tell me about her. She's going to be at the Castle on February 16th.
Irish fiddle player, champion whistle player, singer. She was played in Gaelic Storm.
Oh.
And she was featured in the Titanic movie. Right. And The Steerage.
That's right.
The band. And Road to Perdition and some other great movies where they needed some Chicago Irish musicians to play. And she is quite a writer herself and singer. She'll break into a jig in the middle of a set.
And it's around Valentine's Day, too.
We're going to do a candlelight concert of Celtic love songs.
Ah.
And Kathleen suggested that to me, and my first reaction was,
are there any?
Are there any?
I'm half Irish, and that was my reaction.
Are there any?
Yeah.
But apparently there are. It's not just unrequited love.
I'm going to be there. I mean, it's not just thing. Yeah, why did you leave me? I'm going down to the pub.
Right.
March 2nd, Larry Gray at the Castle.
Larry Gray is a marvelous musician. He's Ramsey Lewis's regular bass player,
yeah.
And he's been around for quite a while. And he plays with John Moeller a lot, the great guitar player from the city of Chicago. And I'm not sure who he's bringing this time. I leave it up to him.
Well, Ramsey's not playing much, but you know, who knows? Ramsey could show up. Then on March, January, February, March, March 30th, Michael Smith, who one of the great songwriters of our time.
Michael Smith is a genius songwriter.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, a lot of people don't like to throw that word around.
I know. You're not. Yeah, you don't. But I agree with you. I don't either.
Michael has a wonderful new album about songwriting that you should hear. It's really wonderful.
Well, his song "Such Things Are Finally Done" is imprinted on my brain forever. Then on April 27th, Come Sunday, we'll be at the Castle.
Come Sunday is the brainchild of Sue DeMille from Sons of the Never Wrong. And it's gospel jazz.
Yeah.
And it's not your grandfather's gospel. they're pretty phenomenal.
And then in June, Ann Hills, I'm assuming I miss the one and only Ann Hills. I'm assuming, John, that you may, is this firmly set, or if someone comes to you and says, hey, I'm free on April 4th, why don't you let me play? You might be able to do that, mightn't you?
I did. And on February 23rd, David Boyle is a playwright.
Wow.
Do you know David Boyle?
Yeah, I know who he is. Yeah, I don't know him personally.
David Boyle wrote a play called The Accidental Organist about the life of a church organist that is hysterical. It's a beautifully written play, and we're going to do that at the Castle.
See, this is great. I think there is such great flexibility to having both of these places, the Heritage Gallery and the Givens Castle, both within a block and a half block of each other on 103rd Street in beautiful, stunning Beverly. May I convince Flannery to open his house for drinks before the show?
We should have a pre-party.
You should. I'm sure he'd love that.
Yeah.
I'm sure he'd love that. The great thing about Mike is he might actually do it, too.
Right.
We've got to take a little last commercial break, and then I'm going to come back with John. And it's so great to see you, and this is such a great thing. I'm going to ask you two things. I'm going to ask you about your yoga and how that has changed your life, because you maintain it. It has. And what the response over the next year, 2019 may be a wonderful year for you, because I think the response to this concert series is going to be extraordinary and extravagant. And what ideas that might put in your head.
Time, time, drifting away. Flow like the river, flow like the river. Time, time, drifting away. Flow like the river, flow like the river. Time, time, drifting away. Flow like the river, flow like the river.
There have to be a number of people. As much as you are a nonstop energizer bunny, musical energizer bunny, especially now that you're a yoga fanatic, there are people who've been there are people who are helping you put on this. This is a very ambitious concert series, as I said.
I was in Vicky's place, and we were talking about
Vicky Simmerling.
Vicky Simmerling, and there was a gentleman that comes in, Dean Miller, and his wife Martha Swift used to come to all of my concerts at World Folk Music, and they loved them. And he said, "John, I want to be a part of this."
Wow.
Dean is 89 years old, and he just loves it. And he's given us a generous gift to help get some of these.
That's great. It shows you must take some real pride in that, because you were saying one of the reasons you're doing this is because since you ran the folk music world music company down there, you hear from people, you affected a lot of lives. And you can argue that one of the reasons there's a lot of entertainment at the fabulous taverns on Western Avenue is because kids got used to listening to it, and kids learned to play at your place, and they want to play somewhere.
Bluegrass has become a very popular venue, genre down on the south side of Chicago.
It could have surprised me. And I know what time are these concerts? That's one thing.
7 o'clock.
7 o'clock at night, so you can stop into the golf store before. Do you go over there just to chat?
I worked there.
You did?
I repair golf clubs as well as fiddles.
It's an amazing, for those of you who, it's not one of these golf world nonsense places. It's a real hands-on kind of place. I wrote about it a few years ago and was just charmed that his father had started a golf store right across from Jackson Park Golf Course when it opened, 100 years ago.
Over 100 years ago.
Okay, John Devins. How did you get hooked on yoga?
My wife, Julia.
It's always the wife.
It's always the wife. Julia Dusick Devins. She for almost our entire marriage, has been on me to do yoga. And I have always shunned exercise. Of course, I was a runner.
Yeah.
But exercise is too much.
Right.
And so I went a few times, and it's a very intimate little class, and half the time I would be sleeping in the corner.
That's pretty intimate, yeah.
But finally I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
But you do it slowly. Yoga's the kind of thing where you can do very slowly, and you can you grow into it, and it does energize you, and it does for an old body like mine. It really helps.
Wow.
And it's golf exercises too. That's the other thing. If you look at golf exercises, they're basically yoga.
Wow. Are you any good at it?
Yoga?
Yeah.
I'm fair.
Yeah.
I'm fair.
But it really does make you feel healthier.
It does.
And stronger. Are you a better Okay, here's the key question. You a better golfer?
Oh yeah. Sure.
That's going to have that right now in the wintertime has about 500 people out there going, honey, I'm going to try to get in a yoga clip. No, this is talking about New Year's resolutions. You've just inspired
I've inspired a bunch of people. Yeah.
1,000 New Year's resolutions.
Maybe should open a yoga class
at the golf store. A folk music. That is not a bad, that's actually not a bad combination. Yeah. The other question I want to ask you, John Devins, is given the success that you are undoubtedly going to have with this concert series that's taking place, the first one coming up is Ann Harris on January 19th at the Gibbons Castle, then Eddie Holstein at the Heritage Gallery. And if you miss that in a crowd of 50 people watching Ed Holstein perform, you're crazy. If you miss any of these, you're crazy. I would hazard to say they're all going to be sold out eventually. Don't you think, and I know you, don't you think this is going to put in your mind the notion of perhaps starting a new place somewhere in that neighborhood?
I don't think so.
Really?
I don't think so.
The old experiences were just too...
It was a wonderful run, but it's time-consuming. As anybody who runs a business will tell you, it's awfully time-consuming. And it would have to be a not-for-profit.
Well, there's an interesting thought.
Yeah.
So do you think then that the last concert scheduled is June 18th. Do you anticipate...
Is it that late?
Yeah. 6/18. I think January, February, March, April, May, June. I have it at June 18th.
May 18th.
Oh, May 18th.
May 18th.
Oh, okay.
Is
May
Ann Hills.
Okay, big deal. I'm a month off. Do you anticipate doing this for the entire 2019 season?
Sure. We take summers off.
Yeah.
And so we won't be... The next one will probably be September.
Now, you still play.
Yes, Julie and I still perform.
Where?
Libraries, some saloons. Very few saloons now. I don't stay up this... I only stay up this late for Rick Cohen.
You're a yoga master or something, right?
Right, right.
You can't go into...
It may get better.
Wait, is there some problem between yoga and drinking? If you're a yoga master, can you still drink and have a cocktail?
Well, sure you can. Yeah.
Take me back, John, just for a second. We got only a couple minutes left. But if memory serves, and it always doesn't always, believe me, you picked up a guitar when you were 12.
12.
You picked it up why and how and where?
John Lennon.
Really?
February 1964.
1964. So you wanted to be a Beatle.
I wanted to be John Lennon.
I just thought, it's so funny. It's online somewhere. You can get it on demand somewhere. 60 Minutes just did an interview with Paul McCartney.
Did they?
And it was charming. And they showed, Paul was pretty amazing and forthright. And they showed some pictures. The interviewer, whoever she was, said, you and John Lennon had this horrible falling out. And he showed pictures of Paul and John when they were older. Laughing about something. It was really wonderful.
A lot of that stuff pretty overblown.
No kidding. Did you get it? Were you in garage bands early on?
Oh, yeah.
What were the names of some of them?
Well, we didn't have a name. It was the Garage Band.
The Garage Band. Right. If you'd been able to
I
keep
still
that.
Remember the cats were, Betty Caponera, John Gronkowski, Rick Kister.
The funny thing is, not that funny, but I got an email or a text or something from Cindy Caponera earlier today, who was indeed a talented actress, comedian, and who was indeed your neighbor.
For years.
With her brother,
John.
She said... She just talked about her undying affection for you. It wasn't in Canaryville. It had to be like when you moved first.
Canaryville.
It was. That's where...
We grew up together, 42nd and Low.
Wow.
And my family wasn't musical, but the Caponeras, if they had a party, they sang into the wee hours, and that's where I would be. And Betty and I, she got me playing guitar.
God, what a small, great world this is.
And we went, we did the church thing. We were one of the first guitar masses back in the day.
What church?
St. Gabriel's.
Wow. So she inspired you.
Right.
She inspired you and tried to pull you away from the evils of the garage band aesthetic at the time.
She was in the garage band.
What did she play? Or did she sing her?
Yeah.
And just talking about all this and talking about your experiences and people coming up to you and saying, hey, I'd like to help with this concert series because I remember what you did at the World Folk Music Company.
Right.
It just tells you, I think, how meaningful music can be in people's lives, and to be deprived of it is a sad, sad thing. John Devins is doing his part. He does not have a website now, but I'm sure if you... went to the Heritage Gallery site?
We have a Facebook page.
Oh, you have a Facebook page. What's it called?
Givens Castle and Heritage Gallery Concerts.
Well, that's easy. That's easy. But he soon will have a website. He and I, two of the great computer illiterates of our time.
I'm looking for volunteers to put this thing together.
Isn't there some nice St. Xav girl who is, or boy, or is that, girl school?
No, it's a
co-ed?
Big school, yeah.
Oh, good. Just go over there.
They have a football team, Rick.
Go to the computer class. Oh, my God. Well, the Bears have a football team,
wow,
too.
Yeah.
What a surprise. What a surprise. John, it's always a treat to see you. And
fun,
great
Rick.
Luck
Thank
with
you.
This. And I'll start playing and promoting it all the way through. And I will get down there, too.
Good.
That's the best part. They don't treat me like a stranger in Beverly. Beverly's an unbelievably
they love you down there.
Welcoming neighborhood. Yeah, they love me at churches. So thank God they're Unitarians. See you next week. I want to thank Ernie Skatton, the world's greatest engineer, Ben Anderson, the world's greatest producer, and you for listening.